Great topic, and it's very timely. When you were talking about engaging the child or the teen in problem solving, it really reminded me. I mean, we have this issue a lot with executive function and teens. And a lot of times kids come to us and they're kind of shut down. They're kind of resistant to change. And so we had a young man, not this past summer, but the summer before, and he was brilliant, but he was failing everything. And you know, parents identified that he needed to work on some executive function skills, and he did. I mean, he didn't turn in assignments, but he was so resistant to any kind of change because he felt like, well, he was brilliant, and I'm so smart, there shouldn't be anything wrong with me. So working with him, you know, if we would suggest like, hey, let's get a planner, or hey, let's plan out your day, he would push back and became really resistant. And so instead, we took that approach to kind of involve him in solving the problem, and we used a program of ours called AMPS that has kind of a metacognition element, and started to train him to think about his own thinking. But instead of it, you know, the problem being, you know, something he was doing wrong in his life, we made it about the activity we were doing in the program, so that the activity was the problem we were trying to solve and not him. And slowly he became less and less resistant because he was part of that like problem solving collaboration. And slowly we were able to then, you know, generalize that to his life. And so that's just as you were talking about that, I'm like, yes, you know, we do need to involve our kids in problem solving, so that because at first we're taking something away from them, or we're a lot of times they think you're saying something's wrong with me. And really approaching it from a different standpoint of like, no, the behavior is the problem, or you know, this component is the problem. How can we solve it together? Has been really effective in executive function training. So really appreciate that. Keep posting questions and comments. Let us know who's here and where you're checking in from. I do have a question from that was PM to me in Mom Squad. This is a big one. So this parent is asking, how can you tell when a video game is an addiction, or when your child has an addiction? This mom suspects that her son, I mean, he's acting like it's an addiction. You know, they've caught him getting up in the middle of the night, and playing in the middle of the night. They've tried turning off the internet and having to do that, cutting him off and turning off the internet, you know, at 10 o'clock when everybody goes to bed. And he tried to apparently tap into the neighbor's Wi-Fi in order to get online and play. I mean, just kind of doing these behaviors that, you know, trying to get online and trying to continue with his video games. And so this mom is just asking for some feedback and advice. How do you know when it's at that addiction level, and is the solution just to cut him off cold turkey? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, so when we talk about video game addiction, it's very similar to substance abuse addiction. So you have this craving of wanting it more and more. So most likely, I mean, it's possible if he's getting up in the middle of the night, that means he's craving more of it. And he probably is probably experiencing symptoms of addiction, which is I need more and more of it. I can't stay off of it. So yes, kids are very savvy. They will figure out you turn off the Wi-Fi, if they have LTE or you know other access, they will get it. I'm not a fan of cold turkey. So this is again of what we talked about before. It's kind of like removing someone off of anything. Cold turkey can be an issue. So what we want to do is what I would recommend is, well, first of all, having that conversation in terms of this is how it's impacting your brain, right? And we're here to protect you and to take care of you, and this is our job as parents. That's number one, having that conversation on what the plan is. And I think this is where parents just have to create that plan, because I don't think if he's addicted, most likely he'll have a hard time detaching and won't allow the parent to take it away. So I think that also, you know, when we say cold turkey, what do? We just take the laptop away or whatever the device is, or we can create a conversation around saying something to this nature of, well, you know, I have noticed, you know, you were going on it in the middle of the night. So, you know, I think what we're going to do, because this is not safe for you, is we're going to maybe take the laptop away or the devices at night, because I know it looks like it's really hard for you. I can understand. So we're not upset about that. I think it's important to go into the emotions that the parents are feeling, because kids automatically operate on fear and they're just thinking, oh, are you upset at me? Oh, are you mad at me? And they make all these assumptions based on every time a parent puts a boundary, a rule, or a structure, automatically the parent is strict. The parent is the meanest parent, and that's okay. I said, well, thank you, lady. Later, when they're in their 20s, they'll realize. I have this happen all the time. Like, I understand why mom and dad did that. But it's all about how do we function until we get there? So I think starting a conversation and talking about it. And I think this is what we're going to do. And they probably have to remove the device out of the room. I think that is the safest. I mean, kids need at least 9 to 10 hours of sleep at night. I don't know this child's age. So that can impact now. We're talking about impacting sleep, affecting your health. So we can't allow that to continue. And that's where parents need to make that decision on what they're going to do in terms of possibly removing it from the room, because this is a problem, but also talking to him about what this feels like. Identify the behavior, not saying something's wrong with you, never. It's more about identifying the behavior that is an issue, like the assignments. The behavior is not that you are not good enough. The behavior is you didn't turn in your assignments. Can you tell me what happened there? Are you needing any help? What happened? Often kids will say, I forgot. It was too much for me. I couldn't handle it, or I didn't understand. So again, like, oh, okay, I can understand that. All right, how can I help you? Now you're allowing me to get involved. Okay, no, I don't need your help. Well, if the child with the addiction says, I don't need your help, well, this is where we have to, sometimes parents just have to step in a little bit, you know, more strict and more structured, and just say, well, I do think it's an issue and this is what we're gonna do. How does that make you feel? We can still talk about the feelings piece. And most likely they're not going to be happy, but it is for their benefit. So it's not always about making kids happy, but also keeping them safe, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's your job as a parent, isn't it?
Right. That right.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're going to have the struggle. I think we shouldn't be afraid as parents to deal with the struggle, like in terms of having the struggle around us. Yes, the struggle is painful. The tantrums are painful. The fighting is painful. But sometimes, and you know, if that's, again, it's like Jill was saying, is maintaining your calm is hard sometimes when you've had a hard day at work and you have chores and you have other kids to take care of and you are busy doing other things. But just being mindful that if I can't do it at this moment, we'll talk about it in 5 minutes, for example, or in 10 minutes, or give me this time to enter, you know, to come in, to do what I need to do, and then we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
So thinking about that issue of video game addiction, because that has come up some, and I'm sure it's becoming a bigger issue now with kids not having as much to do. I wonder if it would make sense, you know, if you look at the total amount they're playing, And together look at that and then try to whittle that away a little bit. So say this week, we're going to cut that down by a half an hour. If they're playing 5 hours, you know, and you're cutting it by a half an hour, they're still playing a lot, but maybe then coming up with a replacement behavior. So instead of playing video games during that half hour, you know, let's play a board game together, or let's walk around the block, or let's bake cookies, or something, if we could replace it, you know, do something to replace that during the week. Exercise would be a great one, especially if they're sitting in front of a screen like that. And then each week, maybe bring it down 30 minutes or whatever to gradually wean them off. I don't know. Do you have a thought about that?
Yes, I love that. It reminds me of what we talked about in our earlier LD Expert Live back in the summer, was how do we wean kids back into school in terms of sleep? And it was the same thing. And we can't do the just remove everything. It is about doing the increments is really important. I think that's a great idea. And also the replacement is like redirecting. It's redirecting mm-hmm. behavior. And I think that's going to work because at the end of the day, kids do want to spend more time with parents. Even though we're all in the home together, are we really spending quality time together? Mm-hmm. Everyone is off doing their own thing. So there could be more isolation, more withdrawn. They're more withdrawn. So what is it? And I even think a great idea would be for parents to maybe just create a list that they could just keep visible somewhere mm-hmm. where they're writing down on replacements. And that could be baking cookies. That's one of, you know, taking a walk, going to the park, whatever it is, that could be a replacement. And I'm just envisioning doing this with your kid and the kid can choose, well, what do you want to choose for today? Because remember, we did come off the computer 30 minutes earlier. That was our plan. So go ahead and choose that. But I think you have to have that conversation right before so they know when we do the redirection exercise, they can go directly to that list, mm-hmm. choose, because they created it, right? And so mm-hmm. it's theirs.
And it gives them some feeling of control. You know, mm-hmm. yes, they had to get off their device, but they get to choose. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Great advice. Thank you. We have Sharon checking in from Placentia, California. Hello and welcome. And we have another Sharon that's asking about, she says, our school district is now using core competencies model in their schools. They've also included this in their IEPs instead of direct executive function skills training. And she's just asking, will this address the needs for kids with executive function weaknesses? So I think core competencies, I haven't heard that term, but then I've been out of the classroom since 2010. But it sounds like a basic skills type of model where we're teaching mm-hmm. kids, you know, to follow a schedule or, you know, be on top of homework. I have seen that in our local school district. So it's called basic skills or core skills. And it's teaching them just the routine of being a good student, you know, following a schedule and turning in assignments and things like that. Does anyone else have any? I have seen it be effective with kids because it does give them a lot of structure. Just in working, you know, at the learning center, kids that are in some of these classes where it is incorporated into their IEP, it does. It gives them something to, you know, using their model at school. And you know, if you're using, you know, turning things in online, things like that. So it's using the exact model that the school is using and teaching a student how to function effectively in that model. So I have seen that be very effective. It doesn't always teach, you know, maybe the underlying skills that are impacting executive function, but it helps them at least be able to keep their head above water at school with all the different teachers and assignments.
Yeah. Right.
I will share this with everyone. I don't know if you can see the camera. Do you see this? So
yes.
This is, I'm sure you can get these on Amazon in different forms. So, you know, this, I'm pretty old fashioned this way. I really love for executive functioning. I just love the writing component. So just to answer, I mean, as you were talking about core competencies and what that looks like and how other parents can use this. So this has been awesome in our home too. So every morning when you wake up, you know, when school starts, this is a really good task to do, because let's say on Monday, you can write down everything that's already posted online that you need to do that day. I think that what's happening is when kids are seeing, and not to veer off topic off of video games, but I think this is important with the executive functioning, because I think it ties in so much in that muscle that needs to be massaged and exercised that they are losing right now, just not being in school, period. I mean, I think we all know that. And also with the video game impact, there is a decrease in executive functioning and patience, et cetera. So what I would recommend is they can kind of like jot down, okay, what do you have planned for Monday? What are you going to do on Monday? And then I think the power, again, of crossing out mm-hmm. What you already completed is so great because they feel like they've accomplished something. And then it's really great for the parent to kind of also check in. Oh, did you turn in everything? This is also something I'm sure same style they're using in the schools in terms of teaching them how to create their schedule, be organized, and not get overwhelmed. I think they're just getting very overwhelmed with so much. And part of the video gaming, I think, decreases that muscle ability where, let's say before, imagine they had more muscle ability to handle more, let's say pre-pandemic. And now it's much less because everything is instant gratification. I want it now. Think about when they're playing that game. It's immediate almost. I'm also seeing that when we go back to the anger and them getting upset when they're losing. So imagine sitting there taking a test or listening on to a Zoom session. Do they have that patience now? Much less. So I like that they're using that. And I think it's, I think it should be a class. I think executive functioning skills, study skills should be a class for kids, because this is something you're either born with it, or of course it can be taught. Some kids are just naturally type A. They're excellent at organizing themselves. And that's what I'm noticing also with Zoom is kids on Zoom who are succeeding really well are the type A personalities who can handle a lot of information and just multitask. So that's why we are seeing kids who are not, which just different personalities and styles are having a harder time.
Yeah, and definitely our kids that already have learning and attention challenges even more so. So that makes sense. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you to everyone. Keep checking in. Let us know who's here. We'll check in one more time before the end of the show. So if you do have a question or a comment, be sure to post it. And I'll see you soon.
Great. Thank you, Lauren. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stowell here with clinical psychologist, Dr. Regine Maradian, talking about key parenting issues for today. So we've been talking about some different ways to communicate with our kids. What thoughts do you have about communicating with our students who are struggling with learning or attention about what they need and what they don't?
So I think we go back to, again, creating, right, a form of structure for our kids. And like going back to this, that little form that I showed, and you can find that anywhere. They have it on Amazon, just different forms. It doesn't have to be exactly the same one, but just in terms of a schedule, a paper schedule. I think that the kids who are now struggling with learning and attention, I think it's really about doing these little check-ins throughout the day. It's kind of like, and I'm sure, I'm curious also to see how you're doing it at your center, because it is the same method where we're checking in, how are you doing? Maybe it's per the hour, but also at the same time, giving them somewhat of that independence. I always say, let's allow them to succeed instead of us parents being constantly on them. And let's give them a little bit of that independence, because I feel like when they feel that they have the independence, they detach from the diagnosis, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much mental health stigma that kids feel. Oh, I have anxiety. Oh, I have ADHD. I don't like this. I want to get rid of this. I want to be normal. This is all I hear. And, you know, when you give them that independence and try it out for a week, and independence can look like, well, let's do this schedule. I'll give it to you. And maybe I'll check in with you only one time at the end of the day at 5 o'clock and see if everything, you tell me, what did you struggle with? And we can look together at what was turned in. I just told this to a client yesterday. I said, this is not that you can't be trusted that you didn't turn it in. I am sure you turned it in. But sometimes when there's too much to do, we often miss things. It happens. We're human. And I think when we normalize that, as we adults can make errors and mistakes, it's natural. It normalizes it for them. Because remember, kids feel everything in terms of, you know, in that moment, it just stays like an imprint, like a trauma. This is never going to end. Whereas we as adults can kind of detach from that and say, okay, I'll just do better next time. But in kids' minds, it feels so intense, right? That failure or that assignment they didn't turn in, or they got scolded by the teacher, or something had occurred that day. And I think now also with grades being so visible in some classes, that causes also more stress on kids. So I'm a really big advocate on, you know, let's detach from the label piece, and because you are not your anxiety. You are not your learning disability. You are not your ADHD. You are you, and what makes you unique and good and special in terms of your talent and what you can provide. So I think when we reframe it that way, they feel better, they feel stronger. And, you know, sometimes you can even give the learning disability a nickname. Oh, there it is, it's popping up again, or, you know, and just having fun with it. And I always attribute it, it's a weakness that you have. This is your weakness. I have my weaknesses too. And I think when the parent steps back and takes on that stance, or even ask the kid, what do you think mommy's weakness is? Or what do you think I struggle with? Because we all struggle with something. So that's the normalization part that I think we need to do more of now more than ever and take this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, dialoguing with them a little bit about what they feel like they need from us. You know, kids are amazing, and I think we do tend to underestimate them. As parents, you know, we just want so badly to protect them and help them, and we feel like we're not doing our job if we can't do it. But sometimes in our effort to keep them from failing or to make sure that they're not struggling, we keep them from gaining resilience and independence. And that's not to say with our kids who are really struggling that we don't give them any help, but really dialoguing together about, you know, what pieces of it they really can do, and allowing them to do that and setting, you know, as you said, a check-in time where we can come back and check, but allowing them to work on it themselves and getting their feedback about, you know, what pieces they would like support in and what they feel like, yep, I got this. Because they feel so much better about themselves when they do know they've got it. They can do some of it themselves. Go ahead.
No, I was going to mention, as you were talking about that, is the discussion pieces. You know, when you step back, and most kids will say, I just want you to listen. I don't need your feedback. I don't want to lecture. I just want to hear. I just want to talk. And some kids will express that and some won't. So I think it's just automatically to assume that that's what kids need, and just starting with that active listening piece could be helpful too.
You know, back in September, on September 22nd, our guest on LD Expert was Michaela Caliendo. She is a delightful 16-year-old with ADD. If you haven't watched the episode, you should. She gave really good advice for students, parents, and teachers from the perspective of someone living with ADD. And she and her mom obviously had a really good relationship, but she said, I hate it when my mom says, do your chores. She says, I already knew I had to do my chores, so now that you told me, it makes me angry and I don't want to do them anymore. And she said, ask me something like, how are your chores going? Or how would you like me to remind you what the steps were? We want to empower our kids. And sometimes it's just that really slight shift in our language that will do that.
Yes, it is so powerful, Jill. It is such a powerful statement when you put it back on them, and you will miraculously see that room cleaned. You will miraculously see things picked up. I mean, just by shifting that one statement, right? Or how's it going? Do you need any help on this? Or, you know, what is your plan today? And, right. and versus telling them, I think when you tell them, there's this innate feel of, I'm just not going to do it. Don't feel like doing it just because you told me. And I also, adults feel that too with their adult parents, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, oh, I'm not a kid anymore. You don't have to tell me to do X, Y, or Z. So we have to assume that also kids feel that same way because they've expressed it, definitely.
Right. I'm Jill Stoll, founder of Stoll Learning Centers, and this is LD Expert Live. Let's check in with Lauren and our viewers one more time before we wrap up today. And then, believe it or not, we're going to wrap up with some positives about the pandemic.
Hello. Hi, we have another another question coming in from Mom Squad anonymously. This is kind of a little different, but it does relate to online and virtual learning. This parent is asking, have you seen kids with increased anxiety being on camera on Zoom? So online classes. She describes her 11-year-old daughter kind of having anxious behaviors, doing a lot of like, she'll like perseverate on being on camera. Like she has days where they have to be in class and the teacher is requiring the students to turn on their camera in order to take attendance. And then there's non-attendance days where they're supposed to be doing their work. And so on those days when her daughter needs to be on camera the night before, she perseverates on that and thinking about, oh, I have to turn on my camera mm-hmm. and what am I going to wear? And is kind of tearing their family apart because no one's allowed in the room when she's doing online classes. And so mom is just asking, you know, is that anxiety? And should I be worried about that with her?
Yes, I'm actually seeing this a lot, believe it or not. You know, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, think about it at us, just us now on camera or when we're on Zoom, we are looking at ourselves. And for teenagers or tweens, I call them the tweens, 11 going on to 15. I always joke about that. You know, there is this feeling of, oh my gosh, how do I look? Do I have a pimple? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, is Johnny over there, Katie over there staring at me? Or did I make a funny face? So there's a lot more focus on the body image aspect and how I look, more so than when you're in class. Think about it. When you're in class, you don't really see yourself in physical class, you know, when we were in school. So one option, and I don't know if this is possible, is to actually, you can have your camera on Zoom, if that's what they're using, or Google Meet, but not see yourself. I think there is an option to do that where it's not focused on you. I believe so. And that could help. So that's one. Is it a sign of anxiety? Absolutely. It does sound like some anxious symptoms there, especially as she's ruminating it the night before, thinking about it, feeling anxious during that time. So the other option would also be to come up with a plan with the teacher. I think this is where the parent needs to probably step in, email or create a conversation with the teacher and explain that in private of, this is what's going on with my child. This is very natural. I do understand. And again, my child's mental health is priority and I don't want her stressing about this. I always put it back on the teacher. Do you have any suggestions before the parent makes a suggestion? And allow the teacher to come up with a suggestion. I am sure they're not the first. I'm sure the teacher has heard about this problem. This is what I hear all the time. Even my clients on Zoom, I do give them that option. I say, it's okay. If you don't want to show your full face, I'm fine with that. You could show your forehead. So, because I know how uncomfortable they can feel just being on screen like this. This is hard. So that's the first thing I would do, is probably connect with teacher, validate her feelings. I think parent needs to validate how she's feeling. Say, oh gosh, I can understand what that feels like. Tell me more. What is really bothering you when that happens, just so that the child gets a way of expressing and letting these emotions out. And then after that, well, what do you think? Let's talk to the teacher. Let's try to find a solution on this, because I can understand how you're feeling. Now you're creating a bond with your child. You're communicating positively. You're validating their feelings. And we're coming up with a solution, which is the most important. And that will be a gateway for other problems in the future. And how
great. Yeah, that's great advice. Again, connecting and really validating that this is something real that the child's feeling. So thank you for that. I'm sure this is not the only mom. I've definitely heard about this in our centers from our students, that we just added a whole new element to that imaginary audience part of teenage development, that, yeah, everybody is watching you and now it's on camera. So that is really hard.